Welcome back to After the Siren, proudly brought to you by the Bendigo Bank. Well, our next guest is a legend of Australian sport. He has covered the Olympic Games since 1980 in Moscow and all the way right through to Rio in 2016. The Melbourne Cup, the Australian Open, the Brownlow Medal and the AFL Grand Final multiple times. He has been recognised for his contribution as a sports commentator, including the community and charity involvement with the Medal of the Order of Australia, Merit Medal, as well as being inducted into the Sport Australia Hall of Fame. He's been kind enough to join us live via mobile phone from Adelaide. Bruce McAvaney, welcome to After the Siren.
My pleasure, Neil. Good to chat, mate.
How are you?
I'm going well. No, it's a busy day of sport always on a Saturday. A lot of footy and racing and all the other things on with Wimbledon about to start. So good time, Neil. It's always a good time in the middle of winter with the footy going on.
Good to hear, mate. Now, we've been watching you for almost 40 years. Can you believe that, Bruce? Next year marks 40 years on television, mate.
Well, I didn't know that. And I'm not bad at stats, they tell me, Neil, but I hadn't kept that one. Yeah, it goes quickly. You'd think back to when you were, you know, a kid too, I guess. But it's been a lot of fun, and I've had enormous opportunities. And yeah, look, it doesn't seem like that long. It's like everything else. You feel like it goes in a blur at times.
Well, I suppose you've had a million highlights, but can you believe how fate changed your life when you went or came across from Adelaide, mate, and went to that infamous race meet? Can you tell us about that day and how that changed your life?
Well, Neil, look, this is basically how I got my opportunity. I was working in the public service. I'd always wanted to be a race caller when I was a kid, and I'd sort of given up on that because how do you do that? And I came across to the Kilmore Trots one day and was sitting with a very good friend of mine, Kevin Hillier. And Kevin was a part-time broadcaster from South Australia, but he had his own business. And I expressed to him that I wanted to be a race caller at one stage. And he said, look, come out and give me a hand at the trials. And anyway, I thought about it and we came to Kilmore and went home. And about 6 months later, I'd see him every Saturday night at the Trots and he'd say to me, you haven't come out. So in the end, I did, and one thing led to another, and a whole range of lucky opportunities occurred, and I got a job with the radio station in Adelaide at 5D in a part-time job for a while, and then a full-time job calling greyhounds and harness racing, and that's how I really got started. So, look, I never sat for an audition away. I did do a couple of tapes when they asked me to start, and they were basically, I guess, the auditions in a way, but I got a lucky break, to be truthful, Neil, and it's gone from there.
Well, you haven't looked back, Bruce, because I remember you, mate, I think around about 83, I think it was, doing Glenelg and Port Adelaide in a Sunday grand final. They were then in the Sandfell, mate, because the VFL was on the Saturday, and you called that game, and I think Stephen Kernahan and Craig Bradley and one or two others were in that game, so I remember that well, and then you made the move across to Victoria where you came over to Channel O, was it then, or Channel 10?
Channel 10. So, look, Neil, you've got a good memory. Yeah, I was calling with Robert Odie in those days, and it was a lot of fun, and I got an opportunity to come to Melbourne to Channel 10 to call the Los Angeles Olympics. I'd worked on the Moscow Olympics for Channel 7, but I'd done that out of Adelaide as a host. I didn't actually travel. Sandy Roberts went to Moscow and then went on to Melbourne, but so I came across to Channel 10 at the end of 1983 to really do the Los Angeles Olympics in 84, and then I, end up reading sport news on 10. So I was there for 6 years. So that was another, very big opportunity for me. And I had 16 years in Melbourne, so a long time. Six of those years at Channel 10 and the last 10 years at Channel 7 before I went home.
Yeah, well, you're based in Adelaide these days and attended the recent function there at the Adelaide Oval, mate, the Hall of Fame. I was watching that like all football followers, Bruce. Gee, that was a fantastic night just watching on, mate.
Neil, they're great nights, the Hall of Fame nights. They're a real celebration of wonderful careers. And, it's the highest honour for a footballer, administrator, a coach or an umpire. And we saw it almost the full gamut the other night. And Malcolm, obviously, being in Adelaide, and for Malcolm Blight to be elevated from a Hall of Famer to a legend, it was a pretty remarkable night. So, like everybody else in the room, you have a ball at those nights. They're great nights. And it was a a terrific night for those guys that have, you know, contributed so much over the long period of time. And, you know, guys like John Halbert and more recent guys like Barry Hall and Simon Goodwin. So a terrific night for everyone.
That wasn't from one Woodville star in Malcolm Blight to another Woodville star in Bruce McVaney himself, leading the school teams, mate, the captain of the school cricket and football teams by Craig Bradley's father.
Well, Lionel Bradley was my coach, Neil. So, you know, Lionel was a wingman who played for West Torrens, a little left footer, and Craig was our mascot. So that was in the under-19s at Woodville, the league team. And, yeah, that was a whole lot of fun. And there's a photo that I've sort of lost, unfortunately, but, you know, sitting there having our team photo on this little boy with a ball in his hand sitting in the front and, you know, went on to be one of the all-time greats of Australian Rules footy in Craig Bradley. Little did we know, but he was as keen as mustard in those days, Craig, and he was always at the games. And his dad was a good coach, so they were good days, mate. They were good days. And, yeah, I like my cricket and my footy. Like, see, I was born in 1953, Neil, and really we didn't have a lot of choices in those days. It was really footy in the winter and cricket in the summer. And I think these days, you know, for the young ones growing up, boys and girls, you know, they've got a lot more choices than we had, and that's great.
Bruce, what makes us love sport, do you think? For someone who's turned sport into their career, taking your media hat off for a minute, what's something that, you know, why do we love sport? Why do you love sport, Bruce?
Well, it was through my parents, because it was their interest in sport that created an interest for me. I guess if I had a mum and dad that had, you know, didn't follow racing or football or cricket, I probably, you know, it would have taken me a bit longer to get involved. But my parents were very, very keen. They're both pretty good sports people themselves. Not at the elite level. Mum was a very good netball in those days. They called it basketball. But, so they, you know, I talked to them all the time when I was young about these things. And, you know, so really for me, it's mum and dad. That was the beginning. And then, you know, from there, you make your own running, I guess. But, you know, they're both long gone, unfortunately. But, gee, Dad, over the years, you know, I'd ring them every day and I talk to Mum about family and sport, and I talk to Dad about horses and footy, so that's where I got it from.
Speaking of horses, Bruce, one of your career highlights, correct me if I'm wrong, was the first Group 1 win for the late, great Bart Cummings.
Gee, you know more about me than most.
Watch out, mate. I've been stalking you for 2 years trying to get you to air, Bruce. I've had a bit of practice, mate.
Well, that was in 1958, and it was the South Australian Derby. And only, Neil, when I looked back did I realise the significance of the day. I can remember the day really well. It's one of my probably early memories. So I would have been just five, and Bart won the Derby with a horse called Stormy Passage, and the favourite in the race was a horse called Jordan. And I can remember looking at them in the mounting yard with my dad, and as it turned out, as I, you know, in more recent years, I realised that, you know, Bart won 266 or 268 Group 1s. We're still trying to work out what the exact number is, and that was the very, very first of them, and I happened to be there with my parents that day. So, and, you know, I felt pretty cool when I realised that I was there for that very first one. So, yeah, no, that was the moment. But little did I know at the time, or anyone else, that this was the beginning of the, you know, of the Masters career in terms of Melbourne Cups.
Indeed. And highlights, Bruce, wow, what a privilege you've had, mate. You've probably got that many. You'd hate to sort of ask or point any particular ones out, but from a sports lover, and the 2000 Sydney Olympics, that moment with Cathy Freeman winning the 400-metre gold medal, mate, is that clearly one of those spine-tingling moments for you?
Look, it is, Neil. Yeah, for sure. And that will remain, for me, very significant. You know, to call the Olympic Games in your own country is a huge privilege. I mean, you've got to be very lucky, because a lot of, you know, how do you time that? You've got no control over it. So the whole experience was amazing. And then that night with 112,000 people and the big build-up to the race and then the race itself and Cathy winning and, you know, to be with the microphone in my hand and, you know, no, it was something I'll never forget. And there was a lot of pressure for Cathy and a bit of pressure for other people as well. So I think at the end of my career, when I look back, it's arguably the most significant call that I will ever have, because it was the one you didn't want to mess up, that's for sure, and it's one that you wanted to try and do justice to, and you knew that, well, that just about every Aussie was watching, and it remains one of the great moments in sport. So, you know, to call the Melbourne Cup as well, I mean, as a young boy, I really wanted to be Bill Collins. Bill Collins, you know, the famous race caller from Victoria. And
called the dead heat. Watching it called it from the naked eye.
Yeah, I've been seeing the dead heat in the Melbourne Cup. But I wanted to call the Melbourne Cup as well. So, you know, you alluded to, you know, what are some of the highlights? For me, well, you know, certainly Cathy Freeman's race, any Olympics that I do, to see people like Carl Lewis and Usain Bolt and all those guys. But and also to call those Melbourne Cups and to be involved with AFL footy, tennis. So I've been fortunate. But I think the Freeman race and the Melbourne Cup and to call the Olympics are probably three that jump out at me.
What about last year, Bruce? Something ridiculous happened with the Bulldogs winning from seventh. Do you reckon that's something that will probably never happen again?
Well, you know, Melbourne and St Kilda at some stage will probably get that second one, and the Dockers will get their first one, and then you've got GWS who might get it very quickly, so it won't be so perhaps romantic. But that day was amazing because it was Dennis Committee's last call. We knew that. He'd had a little association with the Bulldogs. He came across to them. It was the fairy tale to end all fairy tales. It was a magnificent game of footy. And the week before in the prelim finals, one of the greatest games of all time, I think, which I, you know, like everyone else, watched at home and just couldn't believe. But, yeah, to be involved that day, and I remember calling, you know, and I can remember leaving the ground that night and thinking, this is just incredible, and that rich feeling you get. So that game is one of the real highlights of me, for me, calling an AFL game. I mean, Dennis had a wonderful send-off. The Doggies won a wonderful grand final, and everyone went home happy, unless you voted for the Swans.
Exactly. Speaking of Dennis Cometti, Bruce, how's that funny story when he was offered the coaching job? I think it was West Perth, mate, when him and his wife rocked up to the local cinema, and they both got a standing ovation. He turned around to his wife. He said, "How accommodating are these people here in East or West Perth?" And they turned around and said, "We've got enough people for the movie to be started now, mate." So, did you know that one?
Yeah, I'd never heard that one, actually.
Yeah, that's one of his special stories where he thought, gee, how accommodating are these people? But they just wanted to see the movie like everyone in the cinema did, mate.
Dennis came to Adelaide for the Hall of Fame, he and his wife, Vee. And my wife, Annie, and myself caught up with him the night before and had a terrific meal together. So we keep in touch, and we always will. I've said it before, we started calling together as work mates, and we ended up as lifelong friends, and, you know, you can't ask for much more than that, and that's the truth. So, I really admire Dennis, and have a lot of affection for him and his family. So, yeah, no, I love that time with him.
Speaking of a sports lover, Bruce, from one to another, we can't not mention the number one sports person of the century in Muhammad Ali, and I think you've got a pretty interesting story with him as well, with the late, great Ron Casey, when he sent you over to America to cover a fight.
Look, it was 1981, I reckon, and I was working at Channel 7 in Adelaide, and I wrote a note to Ron Casey, who was the head of Channel 7 Melbourne, to see whether he was interested in 7 covering the Sugar Ray Leonard-Tommy Hearns fight, and he said yes, and because of my efforts, he sent me across there, which, you know, at that stage of my career, that was just enormous. And so I went to Las Vegas and was in Caesar's Palace in the car park. So it was one of the great fights, two brilliant welterweights. And about half an hour before the main bout, Ali walked in, and, you know, everyone just rose and chanted his name, and it was spine tingling stuff. And, you know, I wasn't sitting very far from him at all, so it was just pretty amazing stuff. So, yeah, I didn't get to see him fight personally. I saw a lot of his fights on television. I mean, I grew up in that era where when Cassius Clay stroke Muhammad Ali fought, they were front page stories. So that was, that was an incredible highlight early in my career. I didn't do any work on the fight, but I was able to watch it. So, look, I'll do a quick story. To go and get the ticket, I had to go to this big suite in this plush hotel. And I had a mate with me, and we went in and met Bob Arum, the fight promoter, and he ended up giving us two tickets. Now, Bob Arum is the guy that's promoting Sunday's fight between Manny Pacquiao and Jeff Horn. So he's still going strong, the New York lawyer, and he and Don King were the two big promoters at that stage. So, yeah, I spent half an hour with him in his suite, and he had a chat to us and gave us these tickets, ringside tickets for the big fight.
That's an amazing story. Now, from talking about the most famous sports person of all time, what about another close friend of yours in Sean Gallagher, Bruce? That's a fantastic story in itself, how you were able to be introduced to him. And did you just want to share a little bit about that?
Well, he's a guy, I always think of young Sean. He's in his early 50s, and I met him at the races in about 1986. I was calling the races and went down into the betting ring, and this young fellow at the time said, "You know, Mr. McElvaney, how are you?" And I chatted back to him, and we do this for a while, and then after a couple of weeks, I said, "Come up and watch a race with me," and he did, and, you know, we've become lifelong friends. And look, he, when he was born, there was a lack of oxygen, and he's had some real difficulties to overcome over the years, and he's enriches so many people's lives, and his mother, Suzette, and his dear sister, Penny, his late sister, unfortunately, and his brother Simon, a wonderful family, and Sean always comes to the races with me, and still comes to a lot of football matches, and yeah, we remain very close. So he's a great character, big Geelong supporter, and incredibly loyal. So yeah, no, he's been a big part of my life, a big part of Channel 7's lives, and yeah, no, it's been a long and wonderful association, to be honest.
No, it's a great story, and I did follow that a while ago just to keep an eye on how he's progressing, and I did see his late sister did pass away with the, unfortunately. But
he's really well now, guys, and he's very independent. His mother's incredible, Suzette, that she gives him all the opportunities in the world, and he's got a lot of things that he looks forward to every day. So no, it's a great life.
Now, before we get to your ideal guest list for dinner, some fantastic matchups. Now, we've got the Rod Laver and obviously Roger Federer, that is, at Wimbledon. I think that was one of you'd love to have seen that unfold. But I think your greatest of all time also on that was the Ali versus Frazier. Is that correct?
Well, that did happen three times, didn't it? And you know, they were incredible bouts. The first one was at Madison Square Gardens. He had two undefeated heavyweights at the time. You know, Ali had relinquished the title because of he'd refused to go to Vietnam, and he'd been banned from boxing for about 3 years, and Frazier had stepped up. Both Olympic champions, gold medalists, and it was an amazing fight. And then, of course, they fought again for when George Foreman was the champion in a non-title fight again in New York, and then they had their classic
Manila.
In Manila.
Yeah, that was... That was an unbelievable fight, that Thriller and Manila, Bruce, I think.
Probably the end for both of them in many ways. I mean, Frazier couldn't come out. I think in the 14th round, he retired, talked into it by his trainer, and you know, Ali was probably a shadow of himself after that.
Well, he collapsed. He actually collapsed once the decision had been relayed to him, didn't he? He actually collapsed in the ring, and as you said, he was never the same. What about your ideal dinner guest list, Bruce? I know there's a couple of famous Australians and a couple of others. Did you want to share? How would that go around as a dinner party in the McElvaney household, mate?
Look, to be honest, I change every minute. I don't know whether I've done this in the past or not, and whether you've got a copy of it. To be truthful, it'd be my wife and my two children, because you know they're the nearest and dearest to me. You'd love to meet some of the greats of the past that you never really have met. I mean, you'd love to sit in the same room as Muhammad Ali, the guy we're just talking about. You know, Sir Donald Bradman, who I was lucky enough to meet up with a couple of times late in his life. But yeah, to be honest, just friends and family. I mean, I admire and look up to a lot of sports people, but I'm not somebody who probably has that sort of bucket wish list that I have to meet. So I reckon I'd just go for Annie, Sam and Alex, my two kids and my wife.
Good answer, Bruce. And speaking of family and personal stories, your health. I can't let you go without just asking the question, because I know all our listeners would, out of everybody, would be curious. So just how are you?
Look, Neil, guys, I'm going well. So about 2.5 years ago, a bit longer than that, I had a blood test that it worked out that I had a form of leukemia, but it's a form of leukemia that if you're going to get leukemia, you're very lucky. Now, I knew about that for a couple of years. in the end, we went public because the story was going to get out into the media, and we decided, Channel 7 and my family, that, look, let's tell the story properly. I'm not receiving any treatment. I'm feeling good. I have regular blood tests, like probably most other people do, and at the moment I'm coping extremely well. So I'm full of optimism, and honestly, I feel very healthy, and who knows what's in front of anybody, but at the moment I feel like I'm in full health. So hopefully that remains that way for a few years to come, because I do enjoy my life.
Great to hear. Now, before we do let you go, mate, we do appreciate your time today very much. Can't let you go without the AFL. Now, Hamish McLaughlin was on our program 2 years ago, Bruce, and we were talking about research and doing your job, and he spoke about all the commentators. So he said there's the commentators of the Channel 7 team, and then there's Bruce McAvaney. So clearly a very, very thoroughly you go about your lot, mate. He said you're fastidious in the way you prepare your notes.
Well, that's a compliment coming from Hamish, because his workload and what he comes to the footy with, and with all the notes and things, and he does a brilliant job. So, yeah, look, we all do it differently, don't we? I've sort of got my own system, and you try to improve it all the time. But what I did find early on, that the more you know about something, the more interesting it becomes. And I guess I'm always frightened of failing and not being well organised. So the one thing I promised myself probably early in my career was, if I don't call well, it won't be because I'm disorganised or ill-prepared. And look, Hamish and Basil Zemplis, two of the young callers at Channel 7, are both quite brilliant in the way they go about their research. So, yeah, look, I'm a bit old school. I'm still with journals and write it down longhand, whereas the other guys are probably a bit more, IT-ish. But, I work with a lot of gifted people, hardworking people, and I've got my own little system, and I sort of trying to make myself a better caller all the time. To be honest, and this sounds, this is the absolute truth, I don't feel like I've reached my potential yet. I'm 64 years of age. I honestly think that I can become a better caller, and that's what I'm working on.
Wow. That's scary for the rest.
I do believe it. And I don't say that to make myself sound humble or good. I say it because I believe it. I'm actually trying to improve because I think there are areas that I can get a lot better in.
Well, can you team the Adelaide Crows win it this year, Bruce? It's a pretty open it's a pretty open race at this stage of the season, mate. It's anybody's game, isn't it?
I actually don't vote for anyone now. You don't have to believe that, but that's the truth. So I don't really have a team, but look, Adelaide just got home against Carlton today, and a couple of goals. It was a good side. I think at the moment it's the most open season we've ever had. I think we'd all agree with that. So anyone can beat anyone just about. But look, they're one of the best chances, because I think they're going to finish top four, and that gives you a terrific chance. But look, if you pinned me to the wall and said, who do you reckon? I think GWS Giants are probably still the safest bet. I'm not saying they're my absolute tip for the grand final, because it's so wide open, but I'm thinking, they're going to get in the top four, and they've got a good chance of getting a home final, and they're going to be pretty hard to beat. But it's up for grabs, just like it was last year.
Well, it certainly is open, mate. It's been a very interesting season so far, with so many close wins or losses, yeah, depending on what side of the ledger the team you follow. Just like last Friday night, Bruce, with the Essendon-Sydney Swans game, where Essendon were well and truly home. I think you had to actually sit and watch it unfold to believe that did unfold the way it did, mate.
Well, there's been a record number of matches, I think, decided by 3 points or less. We've never had a season like it, and we've had so many teams come from behind at half-time and win. As you say, that was a great example of it. 19 points in front with about 3.5, 4 minutes to go. Something similar happened the next night in Perth. Then Geelong did something similar on the Sunday. It's just been that sort of season where we were on the edge of our seats, and it's just extremely even. It's unpredictable. If you're in a tipping competition, it's embarrassing because, if you're getting 4 or 5 out of 9, you're probably holding your ground. So, yeah, it's just a roller coaster, and we're all loving it, guys. It's just terrific.
And I'm sure you're a believer, Bruce, that life itself is the greatest leveler, mate, for all of us. What's your thoughts on Peter Motley and how his story unfolded right at the peak of when we were about to see him explode over here in Victoria, playing for Carlton?
Yeah, look, he would have had a wonderful career, I'm sure. How do you know that? Well, he was just that sort of guy. So I called his very first SNFL match with Robert Odie that day. He played for Sturt down at Glenelg Oval, and he had beautiful hands. He was so brave, a terrific mark. I know his father very well, Jeff. He was an amazing footballer, Jeff Motley. Look, it was a tragedy. But Peter's a huge character in South Australia, a wonderful guy, an inspiration to so many people. And again, a bit like, you know, you talked about Sean Gallagher earlier. Pete's got on with his life. He's been dealt a tough hand, and yet he never looked back. So he's got so many friends, and, he's got a wonderful life. He's going to leave an incredible legacy. It won't be a 300-game legacy and a couple of premierships with Carlton, but it'll be a legacy in human nature and strength and courage. So, he's a wonderful guy.
No worries, Bruce. Well, look, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule today, mate. We really do appreciate it for joining us here on After the Siren today. And on behalf of all of our listeners and everyone here at RPP, we wish you good health and remaining healthy with you and your family, and all the best for the future going forwards.
No, my pleasure. And it's been a real joy talking to you guys. So all the best, Neil.
Good on you, Bruce. Thanks for joining us today on After the Siren.